35. Brevity. Books change. We change. It's time the system changed. I will change it. For me, for the books, for our souls. The story can still be rewritten. Librarian Poppaea Iulia, 48 BCE. Annotated at a much later date with a heavy, bleak ink. We are subjects to our own natures. Books must be true to their stories, and whether we're dead or alive, the role we're given will win out. Accept your duty and find peace. Fighting against your nature is only madness. Learn from librarian Poppaea's tragedy, Apprentice. Ibukin of Ishe, 991 CE. The IWL was not a gentle process. It did not ask, did not offer, it retrieved. So Brevity expected an annoyed book when she'd summoned him. She expected a haughty, insulted, snarky book. Brevity had not expected a train wreck of grief and fury. Hero had barely materialized from the summons when he gave a half-inhuman snarl. He spun, and Brevity found herself against the opposite shelves with a hand at her collar. His eyes were narrowed, and his face wore an unfamiliar expression of pain.
You had no right!
This was not how an IWL request went when Claire did it. Brevity bit down on her frustration and summoned as much authority as she could with books between her shoulder blades.
I am a librarian, and you are under—
But Hero cut her off, with more growl than words.
You left her.
That trembly feeling threatened in her chest again. Alarm laced with panic, but Brevity held on.
The boss will be fine. She always is. We, on the other hand, are in trouble.
Hero finally took note of the thundering beneath his feet. It had only gotten worse, now accompanied by a distant warning creak. He released his grip and stepped back. Not all of the anger drained from his face, but his shoulders thrummed with new tension.
You may be correct, but Claire's trapped. You need to send me back.
What? What happened?
Brevity faltered and noted for the first time Hero's state of disarray. The fine layer of dust and sand and regret. Her eyes widened, but the walls shuddered again, and she shook her head.
Explain on the way.
By the time Hero had sketched a quick outline of what had occurred in Malta and beyond, Brevity had led him through the center of the library. She paused to rescue fallen books and grab scabbards from armor displays, shoving them into Hero's arms as he talked. The little hope that she'd possessed began to drift as he got further into the story. When Hero recounted Leto's sacrifice, the hope had guttered entirely. When Hero sank into his own concerns about Claire and the labyrinth, Brevity latched onto the one thing she didn't need hope for.
Boss will find a way. She's a real librarian, not—
Brevity stopped, squeezing her eyes shut against where that thought was going. When she opened them, she could feel the certainty in her own voice.
Boss isn't going to be stopped by nothing.
You didn't see that place.
Hero's free hand jerked through his hair and betrayed his anxiety.
Just send me back and I'll relay the situation.
I can't.
Hero stopped, nearly dropping the stack of sheathed blades in his arms.
What?
I can't send you back. If you were still in Valhalla, sure. But you said it was a forgotten realm. I can't send you back somewhere we don't have a path to.
But you just—
An IWL is kind of a one-way trip. Besides, the library is sealed and—
Brevity paused as another jolt rolled through and rained dust down on them from the stacks.
And I need you here.
A muddle of decisions warred on Hero's face. And for a moment, Brevity wondered if she really would have to lock him up with his book. Then a frown tipped the scales, and he settled for a terse nod.
Andrus?
Only makes sense, given what you said. The wards are whole—
Brevity staggered as the air was snapped from her lungs. Hero put out a hand to steady her as the lights shifted from white to purple and back again.
Hiro's hand was probably the only thing that kept her from curling up on the floor.
Something just took the first ward down.
How many wards do we have?
3. But the first ward is the dream ward. If that one went...
Brevity faltered.
They're supposed to hold up to demons. What could... Oh, no.
She turned, and Hiro had to tilt so she didn't smack on the business end of the swords he held.
You said he's got the codex pages. He's using the pages as weapons.
Hiro blinked. He can do that?
It's the devil's Bible. Boss couldn't even touch the pages. Who knows what he inked them with?
Brevity's stomach sank. She said the words so she didn't feel them too hard.
If he's burning up pages to get in, the wards aren't going to hold.
Hiro stopped. The floor shivered beneath them as the thundering took up again. His knuckles whitened and curled around the bundle of scabbards. What do you need me to do? It was a question that appeared to cost him something to ask. It helped, just a little. Brevity drew her shoulders up.
Clone yourself? Perhaps procure an ancient artifact of great power while you're at it?
She gave him a game smile as she caught a hail of books that fell from the nearest shelf. Hiro stared. How can you be so blithe in the face of imminent demise? All she needed was an audience. Brevity swallowed the lump in her throat.
Practice. Remember who I work for?
There was a particularly loud impact, and she shot an anxious glance down the aisle, where she could see the ward light still floating above the desk. The second light was stuttering rapidly.
Not good. Let's hurry and, I don't know, set up some blockades, maybe?
I assume there's a plan? Hiro asked. Because if it's two against an army of demonic horrors, I think I'd rather just take my chances on the regime change with the damsels.
Well, without being able to reach Walter, we're kinda...
Brevity halted mid-step, felt like an idiot, and let out a squeal.
Damsels! Oh, you're brilliant!
Hiro managed a confused, of course I am, before following to see what he was brilliant about. Brevity changed course, mentally scolding herself. She'd been so worried about filling Claire's shoes, about being a librarian, running the library as Claire would want, preserving the books as Claire would do, failing where Claire would have succeeded. She'd tried so hard to think and act like Claire when the answer was staring her in the face. She had been thinking like Claire. She'd been thinking of the damsels as books, things to preserve and curate, not people. The glass set door cracked as Brevity barged into the damsel suite. The occupants were gathered in uneasy clusters, likely already worried from what Charlotte and Aurora had reported. A dozen sets of pretty eyes narrowed as they took in Hiro with his arms full of weapons. Brevity could positively feel the blush that radiated as Hiro shifted next to her. Plan, Muse?
Plan,
Brevity confirmed. She took a deep breath and dropped her face into something apologetic. She turned to the damsels and cleared her throat.
Hey, guys, I need a moment. I'm so sorry, but I'm going to need to restrict all of you to your books for your own safety. The library is experiencing technical difficulties with our wards, mainly demons bent on destruction, see? And should the wards fall, it'd be best if you're out of the way. So if you please can make your way to your books...
What? A blonde woman interrupted. She wore a leather catsuit that frankly defied the laws of physics and anatomy. She looked like a spy, or rather, some spy's poorly written sidekick. She must have been new if she was still wearing that thing.
I know this is very sudden, ladies.
Brevity kept her voice slow and calm.
Hiro and I will do our very best, but it's likely that you'll experience a change of management in the near future. Andrus is determined to possess your books, and he has horrors.
She was drowned out by a swell of murmurs from the damsels. Charlotte, appearing to have her Puritan sensibilities insulted more by the disorder than by the news, let out a sharp whistle to silence the group. She turned to Brevity.
What does a demon want with us?
Brevity exchanged a mournful look with Hero.
We think he intends to use books as magical power for his coup, or possibly bribes, for the court.
That brought the protests back in force. I'm not being someone's reward again, a princess with white hair said.
At least you didn't get fridged in yours,
a curvy woman in a pencil skirt slumped into a chair.
Where's Claire?
Claire's on her way, Brevity faltered. But we might be on our own for now, but now...
Brevity raised her hands.
No need for distress. We have Hero here, and...
Heroes don't do shit,
a firm voice spoke up. The damsel wore what might have started its life as a gauzy peasant gown, but at some point it had been ripped and tied and stitched and paired with utilitarian fatigues, until they resembled more of an androgynous apocalyptic soldier than a damsel. They spit and glared with open hostility at Hero.
Except die first. They do that well.
I don't. They're kinda right.
A curvy alien with lavender tentacles said shyly.
Your books. Our books suck,
Charlotte said, and Brevity really would have to find out where that slang had entered her vocabulary.
We're stronger outside of them.
She waited until she received some scattered nods from around the room. She squared up to Brevity.
So give us weapons.
What?
Brevity placed a hand to her chest, widening her eyes.
I couldn't. I'm the acting librarian and you're... We're damsels. Unsuitable ones at that. Isn't that why we're here?
Charlotte picked an imaginary fleck from her skirt. At some point, she'd modified it to make it easier to walk in, Brevity realized. Modeled after Claire's, perhaps. Charlotte crossed her arms.
Maybe that just makes us people now.
And people always have a choice, Hero added softly.
Look, even a hero gets it,
someone else muttered with only a small amount of disdain. Charlotte nodded.
We're people. And we aren't sitting back and letting some old man tell the story for us again.
A low agreement, hesitant at first, trickled through the room. The damsels seemed divided, but the quiet broke when Aurora, silent as always, padded forward on hooved feet. She inspected Hero's arms and reached hesitantly for the scabbard of a blade, nearly as long as she was tall. It wobbled in her hands and she stepped back. She was followed by a chubby boy in a wizard's robe. The leather-clad spy was next, selecting a thin dagger. She sniffed.
No guns?
Tell me about it, said Hero.
And then the rest of the damsels began to take up arms. Hero divested himself of all but his own sword, and soon enough they were busy pulling out unwritten combat books and conferring. Hero withdrew to where Brevity stood in the doorway. Shoulder bracketed against the frame. She was running through the time left. They would need a plan. Barricades, units, tactics. Hero tilted his head.
That was clever what you did there.
What was?
Brevity acted surprised.
Making them volunteer. Tricky.
I didn't make them do anything. I just had faith they'd come up with the right answer.
Brevity sniffed.
Inspiration means having faith. It's what muses do. What I did, once.
You must have been a brilliant muse,
Hero said. A quiet smile grew on Brevity's lips.
I was. Now I'm a Brill librarian. Let's get to work.
36. Ramiel.
No story is insignificant. That's what the existence of the unwritten wing teaches us. No escapist fantasy, no far-off dream, no remembered suffering. Every story has meaning, has power. Every story has the power to sustain, the power to destroy, the power to create. Stories shape time, for Pete's sake. Once upon a time, long, long ago, someday, and then what happened? Living author or dead, written or not, your story shakes the world. That's common sense to a muse, and the idea librarians are supposed to honor. that every story, every human, matters. The hard part is convincing ourselves first. Apprentice Librarian Brevity, 2010 CE. Light blue capsules sparked a dull constellation against a navy blanket. They were that medical blue, the color of latex gloves and bitter chalk, but dulled by the bedroom's yellow-tinged lights. They held the attention of the boy curled over them with a hunger-pang intensity. When Rami went looking for the remains of Leto's soul, he found a cluttered bedroom floating in darkness. Inside, a haggard teenager hunched over his bed, knees drawn and bony. The pointed ears and the oiled skin were gone, but Rami recognized the tangled curly hair, the soft brown coloring, the gaunt jut of the chin from the demon boy he'd met. He was Leto, and yet he wasn't. He was what Leto would be born from, guilt and regret and self-loathing. Rami knew exactly what that looked like. The boy fixed sightlessly on the pills, tugging one end of the blanket to make the little blue ovals twitch back and forth. Back and forth, up and down, as if balancing the scale.
You already know what happens.
Rami made his voice as gentle as possible. The teenager raised his eyes dully to where Rami stood in the corner of his bedroom. The boy's face didn't change, didn't register surprise, as if a strange angel popped into his room at midnight every day. He made no move to cover up the dozen pills before him.
I deserved it.
Do you want to tell me why?
Rami already knew what he would hear, but the question wasn't for him. He had to step carefully. So carefully here. Pulling a soul from its memory was a fragile process, and Rami was aware how desperately out of practice he was. The memory seemed already to be fraying at the edges. An eerie vignette of dark blur muddled the corners of the room.
He's dead because of me.
I killed him. The boy started toying with the pills again. Rami gestured.
This doesn't look like where society keeps a murderer.
I might as well have killed him. Darren, we were friends since we were kids. But lately he was just so annoying and always complaining. I tried.
Frustration flickered to life in Leto's voice, giving it an uneven edge.
I invited him to stuff. He shit all over everything.
He flicked a begging glance to Rami, but the angel said nothing. He clenched the blanket in his hands as his eyes diverted again.
It's like he wanted to be miserable. He was always threatening to kill himself, always talking about it for attention. You panic the first few times because you care, right? But after the 20th time, it felt like it was just talking. He was on about it again, and I snapped. I said, sure, yeah, hurry up and do it if you're going to do it already. God, just do it or shut up, I said.
Leto's breath became ragged, his voice thick as he swallowed.
So he did.
I'm sorry, Rami said.
Don't.
The boy was suddenly tense.
Just say anything but that. Don't. That's what they all said. All they ever say. I kept waiting for someone to figure it out. Read the texts he was always sending me. Ask questions. Figure out I'm the reason that... But no one did. Everyone just knew we were friends. Everyone's sympathetic. Everyone's sad. I'm not sad. I'm mad. I'm so...
Leto screwed his eyes shut again, and his voice broke.
But everyone's so fucking sorry.
You really think they'd blame you?
They should. Darren never cared about normal stuff. The guys at school called Darren, well, they called him a lot of things. I dropped him just to impress guys who couldn't give two fucks about me. I abandoned him.
More pills crept between the boy's fingers, and the shadows stirred across the floor.
Betrayed him. Rami watched the blue dots leaving dust on clenched hands.
You think this will help?
Nothing helps. Nothing fixes this.
Nothing stops it either, Rami said. The hurt doesn't stop just because you turn your back on it.
The boy was silent a moment, knuckles white. Does it even matter?
It always matters to those you leave behind. You broke her heart, you know.
His shoulders hunched. Mom won't care, she...
Not your mom. Claire.
Confusion replaced some of the tension on the boy's face. Memory foggy.
Who? The librarian.
Rami stepped forward, not aggressively, but as one would come around the bedside of a sick person.
It's time to remember, Leto. You've tortured yourself enough.
The librarian.
Leto repeated the word.
His brow furrowed, and the boy seemed about to dismiss it. In this permeable place of time past, grief spent, Rami could almost taste the memories as they cracked through the boy's brain. A headache, gravelly sand, bronze chain, bronze hair, sun on stones, snack cakes, ale and ravens, a kiss, papers and tea, uncomfortably squishy.
Leto shook his head to clear it.
That's not... I haven't... I still have to...
You already have. There's no need to relive this, Rami said. Take my hand and we can talk.
Leto's gaze drifted from Rami's outstretched hand, was pulled again to the constellation of pills in his palm. Who are you?
You can call me Rami.
A familiar twinge crossed his face. Leto frowned. You were chasing us.
I'm not now, Rami said. I just want to help.
Did it matter?
Leto rubbed his eyes.
Rami could feel him fluttering between two memories, two kinds of now, past and present warring.
That was another feeling Rami knew well.
Did any of it ever mean anything?
We make our own meaning, like everything else in life.
What matters to you now? The library.
Leto flinched, an apparent realization like ice water.
They were trapped.
Souls usually didn't pivot this fast. Rami grew concerned. Easy, easy. You're forgiven. You're not in hell anymore.
Who's that?
Leto interrupted,
frowning toward the other side of the bedroom. Rami swiveled around, half expecting to see a parent, a teenage friend. But the corner was empty to his eyes.
What exactly are you seeing?
Rami asked hesitantly. Saving souls didn't mean they necessarily came back intact either. Old dude kind of looks like a hipster. He's got glowing creepy eyes and a suit and striped hair. Like a tiger. Who does that?
Leto froze.
He's familiar. Why do I know him?
A demon with tiger-striped hair and a cold light in his eyes. No, Andrus didn't belong in the mortal world. Not in the memory of a tragic, senseless death. It was wrong. Just wrong.
Rami felt a chill on his neck.
Did you see him here before? The first time around?
Leto clenched the pills in his fist before nodding, eyes still locked on the corner. Rami scrutinized the corner of the room, but whatever Andrus had done once upon a time, he was not there now. If the demon had something to do with Leto's human death, he'd been planning something longer than anyone expected. Worse, he'd involved the mortal world and unaware souls like Leto to do it. It crossed an unconscionable line, one that signaled larger ambitions than just hell. Alarm built in his chest, and Rami was eager to be out of the memory.
Let us leave, Leto.
That's not my name. The boy frowned. He said he could make it all go away. Take me someplace better. And then it hurt so much. He lied. What about you? Are you really helping?
I can only try.
Rami had to answer honestly. The room felt darker, as if the shadows were folding in on themselves. The memory was unraveling, and they couldn't be caught inside it.
This memory. I tried to catch you sooner, but this was all that was left. We need to get you out of here to have a chance.
Leto's eyes reluctantly drifted away from the corner of the room and back toward Rami. He considered.
What about the others?
You mean the librarian?
Yes.
Leto was already beginning to fade.
Just take my hand, and we can talk.
Leto considered the blue tablets in front of him.
You know, it didn't hurt as much as I thought it would.
Dying. He slid off the bed and turned toward Rami. Rami let out a breath as Leto took his hand.
It's not meant to. The pain and death isn't the dying. It's the wounds we leave in our wake.
He cast one wary eye back to the empty corner where Andrus had once been, then swept them toward heaven. Rami didn't let go of Leto's hand until they safely sat down in purgatory. He brought him in far from the processing desk and the gates, wanting to let the boy fully regain himself before overwhelming him with the bureaucracy that was heaven. Rami felt a rush of relief as he looked at the teenager. Leto had color in his cheeks, an alert interest in his eyes that said he was centered and aware. It had been close. Rescuing a ravaged soul was always a delicate process. But he was whole and stable. They stood a little apart from the meandering mass of souls that shuffled by them as Rami took stock. Leto's eyes focused on the day's dead waiting in a tidy, if unwieldy, line. This far away from the desk, the quiet was eerie. The dead didn't have much need for small talk, so the limitless space was filled only with the shuffle of feet. When Leto's eyes drifted back, Rami felt the question.
You remember now?
Yes, I think so.
Leto ran a hand through his hair absently before touching his rounded ears with a jerk.
If this isn't Earth, why aren't my ears?
You are purified.
Rami saw Leto's incredulous look and he waved a hand.
I know, stilted term. Heaven loves them. You were never wrong to begin with, but it means you're not sentenced to be a demon anymore. An act of sacrifice can do that. You've remembered and forgiven yourself for what you did when you were alive.
I didn't do it to be forgiven. Leto shook his head. What I did...
Forgiven doesn't mean no regret. We'll always regret the wrongs we've done. It just means you aren't punishing yourself for it.
Leto folded his arms. His morose look was surprising given the circumstances. Most forgiven souls couldn't race to the gates fast enough. Rami tried again.
That means you don't have to go back to hell.
Leto's eyes widened.
Oh, no, you have to take me back. We have to go to the library immediately.
Rami frowned. Perhaps there had been some damage after all. Some touch of insanity. He touched Leto's shoulder and willed calm into the boy. Leto's shoulders dropped, and Rami began guiding him through the crowd. He skipped the line of waiting mortals entirely. Surely even heaven would understand some line cutting given the circumstances.
You really don't mean that.
Despite all reason, Leto persisted.
I do, and I think you're going to take me.
I think you are misinformed.
No, you came after me after a crocodile creature, god, monster thing, tore up my soul. Somehow, I don't think you do that for everyone. Why me?
Rami furrowed his brow.
It was a brave thing you did there. Even if you're misguided about what side you're on. You didn't deserve to disappear.
Maybe. Maybe not. I think it's because you wanted something. I'll be honest, I'm not helping you do anything to hurt the library, but... Leto looked cagey and proud of himself for it. If you get me back to the library, maybe the librarian will listen to you. Rami let go of Leto's shoulder. His touch had made him calm and obedient, but obviously hadn't dissuaded him from his loyalties. Rami crossed his arms.
You're awfully shrewd for a purified soul.
Leto grinned. Turns out you can learn a lot of things in a library.
And willful.
I think I was always that, Leto said. I just forgot for a while.
Rami snorted and considered the offer. Uriel had ordered him to find a path into hell. Even if Uriel's orders mattered little to Ramiel now, it was no major concession to agree to go back. He wanted to see what had become of the librarian. But it would not be safe. He had intended to leave the boy at the gates. The fact remained that Leto was a purified soul now. Bringing him back to hell risked condemning him all over again. It was a risk that didn't sit well with him.
You won't be able to touch anything or anyone there. One touch, you risk your soul being corrupted again, reverting to your original judgment.
Leto's eyes fished toward the distant gates and back. I understand.
Rami wasn't confident that he did.
You won't be able to help them.
But you can,
Leto said. Rami shook his head.
That's not why I would-
You help people. That's what you told me. The library is under attack by a dude who wants to ruin everything. Aren't demons like your natural enemy or something?
I'm not a part of hell or the library.
Are you part of heaven then?
Guilt settled in Rami's stomach like a stone.
Not precisely.
And do you think Claire is working for evil?
She's hell's lib-
That's her title. Is she evil? Is what she's trying to do evil?
Leto insisted. Rami was not accustomed to moral debate with mortals. He ground his teeth.
No, not as far as I know.
Did she try to do anything to harm heaven, even when your partner tried to kill her?
Rami sighed. Uriel really wasn't giving the best impressions of heaven.
You heard about that.
For an angel, that didn't seem very nice.
There were... It wasn't... It's not as if...
Rami fell silent. There was no defending Uriel's lust for revenge. Hadn't Rami already come to that conclusion? Why did he seek to defend heaven after all this time? Leto appeared ready to pounce at the opening.
I hated myself so much, I hurt innocent people, and it sucked. I'm not doing that again. How about you?
They were approaching the processing desk. Rami slowed as he saw his replacement noticing him. The cherub was an eager sort and tipped his head respectfully. Rami's eyes slid past the desk to the guards at the gate, then to the high tower, where he knew Uriel's office was. Leto was bound for heaven, but Uriel would detain him first for information. And what would Uriel do to a spirited, distinctly uncooperative soul like Leto?
Chances were that Rami wouldn't even be able to get them into hell.
His old access had likely long since been revoked.
Even if he did, heaven was invading hell anyway.
That was all he was doing, Rami reasoned, even as a different decision began to take root. He pushed it aside and tugged Leto around to head back down the hill, away from the eyes of judgmental guards and eager upstarts.
You're purified and I'm not rescuing you again. If I agree to this, there are going to be some ground rules.
37. Claire. The trouble with reading is it goes to your head. Read too many books and you get savvy. You begin to think you know which kind of story you're in. Then some stupid git with a cosmic quill fucks you over. Librarian Fleur Michel 1721 CE. Claire walked. After Hero had left, she'd stayed there for a time, staring at the walls, not quite seeing anything while the shadows lengthened. She didn't know how much time she'd lost. Even with the ruthless sun progressing in the sky, time had a way of shifting and skittering out of her grasp. Her body ached from the cold stone. In her chest, there was a troublesome hollowness that grew and crowded her heart and lungs, making it hard to breathe. But Claire won the argument with her body, and one foot in front of another, she walked. She kept taking lefts. It seemed pointless to change their plan now. Her plan now. Claire trailed one hand along the wall to keep her path straight and her mind from drifting. She had all the time in the world to drift now. It was hard not to follow the thoughts. Brevity would not have resorted to the IWL unless something dire had happened. Andrus had the pages, and Andrus wanted the library. There was a faint hope that Hero could assist, and they could hold out long enough. Long enough for what, though? Claire was lost in a dead-end world. Beatrice and Leto were gone. But what bothered her most was that Andrus could have gone this far without Hell noticing. It wasn't possible. Lucifer and all his generals were too powerful, too paranoid for that. Either Andrus had bested all of them in his scheming, or Lucifer had allowed it. The library had become part of the game. Claire had always been aware that the library and its books were pawns. Andrus himself had taught her enough about the intrigues and deadly maneuvers the demons made in Hell's Court. But she'd never imagined the library was a pawn Lucifer paid attention to. Andrus had paid attention. Claire knew there was more to the library than her literary ghosts. Some demons came to read, either out of curiosity or to understand the genuine magic of human imagination. But she also knew there were demons that ate dreams instead, consumed them, and extracted pleasure and power from the destruction. Obviously, the library was kept apart from the rest of Hell for just that reason. Lucifer had to know. He had to know about Andrus's goal. There were too many coincidences. Perhaps he planned to sweep in when they were all dead and start over. She'd read the histories. She knew Lucifer had used purges to quell uprisings in his realm before. She knew she wasn't the first librarian. She knew hers wasn't the first library in Hell. But the books couldn't be purged. They most definitely could not be parceled up, doled out, and fed to the vile underbelly of Hell. She had to get back, get in control, somehow find a way to destroy a demon with the power of the words of Hell's God, the Arcane Wing, and a legion of horrors at his command. Just getting out of this blighted place would be a feat. An exit, naturally, presented itself the next time she turned a corner and faced another dead end. She was just about to let out a groan when she saw the arch. Wedged in the corner where two stone walls met, lost nearly in shadow, stood a darkened doorway. It was roughly the same shape and build as the one they'd encountered up the stairs, only the light was more muted. Lamplight, not sunlight. "Oh, is it my turn now?" Claire muttered, wary of a trap. She brought her nose as near to the surface as she dared. Lamplight and leather. Her breath snagged in her throat when she recognized it. Beatrice's office was much as they'd left it, stacked with an aftermath of shuffled books and used teacups. Claire caught herself leaning forward, listening for footsteps. Even on this side of the arch, she could make out the distant sound of the Mdina streets that filtered in through the open window. It was night, the only light spilling from the desk lamp on Beatrice's desk. Claire could just make out several bottles and plastic bags that hadn't been there before. Hope clotted in her throat. If Beatrice had survived, she could be just out of frame, stepping away to care for her injuries or her book. Her book. If the struggle with the hellhounds had damaged her book, she'd need repairs. If it was damaged and poorly repaired,
It could fall apart, stranding Beatrice outside her book, or worse, trapping her inside. Oh no.
Claire's hand clapped at her side, where her bag of tools should have been. Her skin was tingling, and somehow the arch had moved a breath away from her nose.
Claire jerked herself back and clamped one hand on top of the other.
Heat stung her eyes.
Bee.
The thought was enough to twist a sharp pain through the numb despair in her chest. Her book could be just on the other side, hurt from ensuring their escape, dying, needing help. She knew. She knew if she went through, if she found Beatrice, hellhounds or not, she would not go back. One step, and she could rest. One step, and she could be accepted, loved, cared for. One step, and all the rest of it could end.
She'd rejected the idea before, but it washed over her again in a way that she was too tired, too grieving to resist. The idea was strong. To rest, to stop, neither to run nor face her past. Her eyes burned again from the powerful attraction of it. She'd felt the power of an easy escape before, when she'd said the god words that had banished Gregor. So she said a different word instead. Fuck. The heels of her hands dug roughly into her eyes as she stumbled back. She ground them in until she saw stars. She screamed, "Fuck!" She'd been looking for an exit, thinking of those left behind, and the labyrinth had presented her with what she desired, like it had with Hero. But this wasn't a temptation built on happiness. It was one built on despair. Not again. I won't. Not! A wordless rage tore at her throat. She flung one sneaker at the arch. The shoe sailed through the air before passing harmlessly through a shimmer of lamplight and disappearing. Not as satisfying as she needed. Claire let out a growl and flung the other shoe after for good measure. The rage drained out of her just as quickly as it had come. Sorry, Bee, she muttered,
then frowned down at her feet.
And now I'm barefoot again. Bloody fantastic.
The images of a dead Leto, a wounded Beatrice, paper corpses and ink blood swept through her. Claire twisted and ran from the dead end, down the path toward the rumbling bellows that echoed from the center of the labyrinth. Ghosts at her back, monsters ahead. The howling grew louder, until Claire could feel the vibration jostling the organs in her chest. The air felt like it opened up, walls widening at the next intersection. She slowed as she turned the corner. The endless dirt paths of the labyrinth fell away to a wide, paved courtyard, each cobblestone dotted with a jade symbol in stone. Half-finished pillars rose every few yards like shattered bones, forming a loose ring around an otherwise barren space. Ragged flags of saffron yellow hung limp from the tops. It was approaching what passed for day here, and the sun throttled down, heating the stones and dwarfing the shadow of the beast that hunkered in the center of the yard. Claire didn't realize its true size until the creature rose from the stones and began to pace. Shaggy hair hung off massive shoulders that appeared mostly human until they ran up to meet a monstrous head. Horns thick as oaks arched out from both sides of its skull. They glowed a deep, blackened red. The beast's head was turned away, but even from afar, Claire could tell that its features were gnarled with muscle, and hairs as stiff as needles. The minotaur skulked past one of the pillars, knocking great blocks aside. It had to be twice the size of the giant Hero had faced in Valhalla. But what drew her attention, what made Claire take a step away from the wall, was the large iron key that swung from a ratty leather strap around its neck. There was no door in sight, but Claire had read enough fairy tales to know what it unlocked. The beast halted and sniffed the air, giving a great roar as it turned. A familiar roar.
Abandon all hope, ye who enter here. Beyond me lies the city of woe. Before me waits
Walter?
Claire stepped forward before considering the wisdom of her actions.
And no mercy will you.
The Minotaur swung its head around. It was a strange, bull-like face, crisscrossed with old scars and tumorous clefts. One eye was milky red in its socket, but the other one lit up with recognition, and there was a familiar set to his bulbous chin.
Hello there, Miss Claire. You really shouldn't be here.
A situation I'm trying to correct as quickly as possible, I assure you.
Claire felt relief like a kind of giddiness. She approached the Walter Minotaur.
Walter Tor?
Carefully.
It's really you, isn't it? What on earth are you doing here?
I'm the gatekeeper. My duty is to guard the gates.
Walter puffed up before tapping his knuckles together abashedly.
All gates.
Claire frowned.
The gates of every realm? But I didn't see you in Valhalla.
Sure you did. Ah, apologies to Hero next time you see him, please.
Claire squinted. She saw no similarity to the giant in the ring when she and Hero had faced the trial to enter Valhalla. He'd been quite thoroughly Viking and wielded
Widowbane!
Claire remembered the overlarge maul now, glittering with the same shadowy red of the Minotaur's horns and Walter's teeth.
You were the bludgeon. You never told me.
The Walter Minotaur nodded.
That was me. Well, part of me. One of me. An aspect. I don't like talking about it precisely. It gets all rather higgledy-piggledy.
It does indeed.
Claire paused as a thought occurred to her.
You're the gatekeeper. You're every gatekeeper. Does that make you...
Death,
Walter said quietly. His gaze gentled, and he rubbed his neck, a gesture familiar enough to make Claire's heart ache.
Some call me that, yeah. I always rather liked Walter.
Oh.
Claire chewed on her cheek. She'd entered the labyrinth expecting to find death. And here he was. And he'd been her friend all along. No matter how far she ran, she couldn't escape the feeling of a story.
Regardless, I am very glad to see you, Walter. I need transport back to Hell, immediately. There's an emergency.
I see. Ah, then may I just see your ghostlight, Mum?
Claire drew out the cold wax candle from her pocket. It was just as dead as Leto's lighter had been. The tiny stub was crumpled on one side from having been wedged against her hip as she slept. Walter bent nearly in half to lean his one working eye over it. His face was solemn as he looked back up.
You're a mortal soul out without a ghost light, Miss Claire.
I am.
Her fingers curled protectively around the cold piece of wax and stuffed it back into her skirts. At the bottom of the pocket, her fingertips grazed some bits of paper that whispered to her, but she left them there for now.
That's a mighty shame.
Walter took a step back from Claire, and pity was a strange twist on his ageless face.
See, I'm supposed to eat any regular folk that pass through here. It's kind of why I'm here.
Now wait one moment, Walter. You know I'm the librarian.
And you shouldn't be here without a proper ghostlight. Makes you a lost soul, Mum.
Walter began rolling his shoulders.
I'm not anything of the sort. I had a light. There were extenuating circumstances.
Claire took a step back. Walter might be death, but she couldn't quite believe that the Walter she knew would attack her, in any realm. But he appeared to be preparing to do just that.
Can you at least tell me what is supposed to happen here?
Well, screaming and bleeding mostly.
Walter paused.
I try to eat you. You try to fight, and then you try to run. It don't work out. Your soul gets swallowed and feeds the realm.
This place has a rather concerning preoccupation with devouring souls, Claire grumbled, rather than feel the flutter of nerves at the way Walter stretched.
Your realm's god dies, and you all turn carrion?
No, I suppose it'd be cannibals, since you don't wait until a lady is done with her own soul first. Walter had the grace to look abashed.
I didn't exactly write the rules, Mum. I hope you know this is rather off-putting for me, too.
Yes, well, eating your colleague is a bit of a faux pas.
You could just turn around and go back into the labyrinth.
I'm afraid not. There are pressing matters elsewhere, Claire said. Besides, it's dull, and I didn't bring a thing to read.
Walter's shoulders dropped.
Then I'm afraid I gotta eat you.
Claire reached for any question to make Walter pause in his warm-up.
What happens if I win?
Huh. Well, no one does that.
But if I did?
If you did, well, you get to claim a boon, I suppose. In the old days, you got to reincarnate on Earth as a kitty cat. But I don't think I got the mojo to do that anymore.
Good. I rather mistrust cats. Claire considered. What's your secret?
Mum?
Oh, come now. I'm an unwritten author, and this whole blighted thing feels like a tale. I know how stories go. Every monster at the center of the labyrinth has a hidden weakness, a trick for the hero to find.
Oh.
Walter was flummoxed.
No one's just come out and asked that before.
But you do have one.
Well, yes.
Walter mulled it over.
I'm not sure I can just tell you like that.
Claire tilted her head.
Is there a rule against it?
Well, no.
Walter's face lit up, pleased as he gave his full attention to it.
My eye.
Claire inspected both the brown eye fixed on her and the milky white orb opposite it.
Your eye. What? I'm supposed to hit you there?
Not exactly. I probably can't say any more.
I see.
Claire sighed, skittering back toward a pillar as Walter appeared to square up.
But knowing that, a hero could escape this place?
You're no hero, Mum.
Walter was mournful as he said it.
As this realm keeps on reminding me.
I'm awfully sorry about this, Miss Claire.
His clear eye was watery, even as he stamped his hooved feet and angled his horns down. Claire reached a pillar and felt for the curve of it behind her.
Apology accepted, Walter. These things do happen.
Walter opened his mouth, and the booming howl that came out was much less mournful and much more horrifying than it had been from a distance. He charged. Claire spun behind the pillar and stumbled back as Walter's impact sent several man-sized stones tumbling from the top. She regained her footing, turned, and ran. Hurtling headfirst into stone did not slow a minotaur much. Walter shook his head once, then charged after her. Sharp red claws that had not been evident a moment before gouged the wall as he went. Claire ran for the exit, but the junction where she'd entered the courtyard was nowhere to be seen. The Greeks always loved their tragedies. She shoved the grim thought from her mind as she caught sight of a flash of yellow. One of the pillar's ragged flags hung lower than the other. At Walter's next charge, Claire took the moment of disorientation as he hit the wall to run toward the pillar. She grabbed it and scrambled her feet against the stone. Bare feet worked to her advantage, for once. Her toes found the small holds between blocks, and she hauled herself to the top. Walter circled the wall with a snarl, but paused as he looked up.
Don't be a silly Wiggins, Mum. This will go faster if you come down here.
I prefer not to.
Claire ran her hands over the top of the pillar, looking for something,
anything to slow down the Minotaur. She shoved a hand in her pocket, and her fingertips hit paper. She took a breath as she drew it out. The ragged end of the Codex Gigas's calling card fluttered in her palm. The text, as usual, was mostly illegible from the tear, but Claire saw the beginning of a word where the location would be. Hel Unri. Andrus was already at the gates of the library, if not past the wards. The calling card was not the codex, merely an artifact of the library. But it was tied to the book, and the book held ancient destructive power. Books tended to bleed and wander, especially old ones. There was a chance, a remote one, that the card had some residual enchantment of its own. Claire had hoped to save that chance for later, but later was gravely in question now. Walter quit pacing and began to back up, stamping the earth with his head down. Claire fumbled back in her pockets and withdrew the ghost-like candle. She quickly squeezed, warming the wax with her hands, and crumpled the calling card remnant around it, making a projectile that would be easy to throw. It stuck, but just barely. Walter charged, canceling any other preparation she could make. The entire pillar rocked as he hit, and the Minotaur dug ruts in the stone as he continued to press his full weight on the displaced stone. Claire held dearly to the top flagstone. It began to pitch. She clutched the candle to her chest and kicked away as she fell through the air. But something clamped over her right leg and squeezed like a vice. It arrested her fall sharply enough that her hip jolted, sending fire up her side. Her knee shrieked, and Claire screamed along with it. Pain watered her eyes when she opened them. Upside down, Walter's knotted face looked like a rotten potato. He held her aloft in one hand, as easily as one would dangle a mouse by the tail. He regarded her with sad, bloodshot eyes and lowered his jaw wide. Claire got a glimpse of dagger-like incisors and wide, flat teeth made for grinding bone and flesh. Her fingers clenched the candle, and as Walter drew her chest toward his gaping lips, she swung back and let the fistful of paper and wax fly. She'd meant to aim for the eye. She hadn't forgotten what Walter had said. But Walter dropped his head back and squeezed his eye shut as he brought her near. The ghost light arced through the air and pinged dully on a great black tongue before it hit the back of the Minotaur's throat. Walter gagged and snapped shut his mouth out of reflex, latching down on the papered candle. A perplexed look crossed his face. A muted rush of air sucked his cheeks. Then a sharp burst of blue and green flame lashed out through his nostrils, out shaggy ears, past his lips, even from beneath heavy eyelids. Walter's grip loosened as his good eye went glassy, and Claire had a moment of terrifying freefall before they both hit the dirt. A limp, meaty arm covered in thick red-brown fur broke her fall. Claire scrambled back to get out of reach, but the arm and the clawed hand attached to it remained still. Her breath was ragged and loud in her ears. It took another moment before she could process that Walter wasn't moving. She slowly shoved to her feet, wincing as her knee shrieked in protest. Likely torn ligaments there. If she could get back to hell, they could be tended to. First things first. Walter's barrel chest shivered, barely moving, muscles twitching under heavy scars. The air held a sizzling sound, and the smell of charred meat suggested that the calling card was still working on the poor creature's insides. Claire leaned over and caught sight of the iron key askew on his neck. As she reached for it, a great clawed hand came down on her wrist and made her heart skip a beat. But the claws did not tighten, did not tear. Claire looked up and saw Walter's good eye just cracked open. Sluggish blood trailed from every opening on his face. Walter made a weak snarl that was intended to be a smile and released her to point a trembling claw at his bone-white eye. The eye was the key. Claire swallowed a lump in her throat and nodded. I'm sorry, Walter.
The Minotaur didn't speak, but closed his eye with a smile that seemed almost proud. A final gout of flame trickled over his lips, and his chest stilled. Claire extracted herself from his arm and hobbled around to the side of his head. She considered the dead eye lodged in a tumorous skull. This would not be pleasant work. She'd had no tools, just Walter's own limp claws. By the time it was done, her skirts were tacky with blood, her fingers trembled, and her hands felt as if they'd never be clean again. But a sphere about the size of a grapefruit and the color of bone sat heavy in the palm of her hand. It was completely smooth and was translucent in sections. Not an actual eye, but something else. That was the problem with defeating the gatekeeper. No one was left to explain how to open the gate. Claire turned it over in her hands. She hobbled up to this pillar and that, pressing the white surface against random stones, hoping something would happen. Nothing did, and the urgency to get back merged with injury and exhaustion to eat at what patience she had left for analysis. Hell and harpies. She had just pulled away from another pillar in disgust when light hit the orb as she held it up. Claire blinked and squinted as she held the sphere in front of her. The courtyard transformed. Through the eye, the world became a wash of milky shadows, but it also became a world of doors. Claire turned a slow circle. Everywhere she looked, narrow gates lined the walls, and the pillars. The pillars. Each pillar held a series of tiny, physically impossible doors that hinged off the pillar like wheel spokes off an axle. The courtyard became a crossroads. But no signposts. Which one? Claire muttered. The orb responded by pulsing brightly, and Claire nearly dropped it in surprise. When she brought it back to her eye, she saw that the doors were colored now. Each gate now held a doorfront decorated with unique lines and painted one of a multitude of colors, more than she would have believed existed. She considered the one in the wall nearest her. It was ivory with metal inlay, every detail gilded. A flock of chubby-cheeked infants frolicked across it, each bearing wings and a golden horn, while some frankly terrifying figures watched from above, borne up by greater wings. Claire could guess the destination for that one, and she chuckled as she stepped back. Hell would be easy to find, but she couldn't just drop into the library in the middle of an invasion and expect a solution to present itself. Claire pivoted as she considered the gallery of pathways around her, a tickle of a plan beginning to form in her head.